The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. Keith and Jonathan each have over 25 years spearheading business transformation programs for Fortune 1000 companies. Keith Koo is an expert on marketing and advertising, risk management, and risk mitigation. Jonathan Ziegler's background is in enterprise sales, management consulting, and marketing. Together, they're the managing partners of Guardian Insight Group, leveraging the diverse knowledge in industries such as technology, financial services, fintech, healthcare, energy, and retail. And they're here to help you break out from your current mindset, make a revolutionary shift in your business goals, and achieve greater success. Now, your hosts for Guardian Insights, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome to Guardian Insights, elevating your business to the next level. The radio show of Guardian Insight Group. Guardian Insight Group is a business advisory firm dedicated to business transformation. And we do that in a number of ways. Given today's economy, market dynamics, and the high rate of change in the industries we support, we just know that there's a lot of opportunities for companies to do better. My name is Keith Koo. I am a co-managing partner of Guardian Insight Group. I have over 25 years of business transformation in such things as mergers and acquisitions, risk management, corporate governance, and finance. In the studio with me is Jonathan Ziegler, my partner. Jonathan also has over 25 years' experience in sales management, consulting, and marketing for some of the top Fortune 1000 customers.
Thanks, Keith. And I'd just like to say that I have the privilege of being on the other side of the desk from Keith for many, many years. And one of the reasons that we came together for Guardian Insights was to provide a solution out there for business leaders and companies who have challenges, because the competitive landscape today is so much different than it has been in the past. And one of the main reasons that Keith and I have come together is because we've learned over the last 15 or so years together where and how to uncover the rocks, so to speak, in making a business more competitive, cutting their expenses, really managing their risk. And so with that, Keith, why don't you tell people why we've decided to come on the radio and start the show?
Thanks, Jonathan. Exactly as you stated, we've done business for a long time. Over a decade ago, Jonathan was selling to me, so Jonathan has all the experience in enterprise sales for the leading companies, and I as the buyer. We realized that business is really based on trust. And so oftentimes when you're in a corporate setting, especially as you're doing large enterprise technology deals, the first thing that people think about, no matter what they say, is price. And when we talk about price, which is a common facet of any conversation when you're dealing with a million, tens of millions,
hundreds
of millions,
yeah.
That is important. But what often gets forgotten are some of the important things which we'll refer to as risk management.
Right. Yeah. So, Keith, your point's really well taken. And this is one of those situations where, from the sales guy's perspective, it becomes important to make the leap of faith, to build that trust, to establish that rapport. But more importantly is to provide the information. Because what happens in the corporate setting a lot of times is there are a strict set of guidelines that the corporation needs to follow in this process. There may be an RFP or an RFI process that has to be followed. There may be other areas which you're the expert at. But what I found is that if you establish this trust and you walk the path with the customer, the most important part of this is value and managing the risk, because there are obviously risks in making a decision. And so one of the things that I think is really important that you and I have been able to bring to bear in our practice, for example, is how we prepare a customer's purchasing process to change or something in that arena. Because they need to understand what it is that they want to accomplish. And price is a part of that, but it should be at the bottom of the list instead of at the top of the list. And I think that's one of the things that you and I have discovered over the last couple of years.
That's correct. And really, it's no different than buying a car. Oftentimes, you might get a great deal on a car, but you don't think about all the things you could have gotten included with that purchase if you just thought about or had the time to think about anything other than price.
True. It's a very good point. I think that's one of the hardest parts that a lot of people – well, the car buying process is a great example because a lot of people find that distasteful. I mean, not to offend anybody, but it's a challenge, especially in today's society where the buyer is much more prepared. They go in with a lot more knowledge and a lot more research done than they used to be able to do. And this is the challenge that we face too on the sales side with the corporate customer. 99% of the time we're brought in much later in the process than we used to be. A salesperson used to be the resource, the go-to person for information and details on the industry, on the competition, on the alternatives that are out there. Today, a buyer for a corporate customer can actually be more prepared and already have that much, 50, 70% of the work done. So what happens from your perspective on the buyer side when you come in and you say, well, I've already gotten this much data, and now I'm coming in and telling the sales guy, I just want it for this price.
Well, that's really the interesting thing, and that's where I think we see different types of industries headed.
Yeah. Right?
We see it in all walks. So if we're talking about technology company, lots of information's out there on pricing, licensing for whether it's hardware or software.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also see it in retail. We know that Amazon just cut, with Whole Foods, just cut some retail prices, grocery retail, for 43%. And that's where I think, to your point, the information is available on generally where price should land.
Right.
But there's almost no information on what other things should be important to you.
Sure. What's the behind-the-scenes rationale or value behind why I should go with one company or one vendor over another?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so we see that with back to you might have a small business, you might have a medium-sized business, and you want to adopt some hot new technology that's going to further your business. And you think, hey, I got a great deal, but you have no idea what you're signing up for.
Right. Well, it's the buzzword bingo, right?
Right.
Somebody's talking about the fact that last year at this time when the Fortune companies, when their annual reports started coming out, there were zero mentions of artificial intelligence and machine learning or virtual reality for that matter. And this year, 1 year later, out of the top 500, I think 460 of the companies, I don't know the exact number, but a huge percentage, three quarters or more, had mentions in their annual reports of virtual reality, machine learning, and artificial intelligence. But what does that mean? What's the competitive advantage? That's where I think you and I have decided to bring this into the marketplace for mainstream to make them understand or help them understand and help them plan for what might be real versus what's not.
Right, which is just noise.
Yeah.
And that's where Peter Drucker, before he passed away, the sage business advisor, he had talked about information smog.
Mm-hmm.
And information smog was this concept back even in the late 90s, early 2000s, that there's just too much data.
Yeah.
And so we know that. Today there's too much data. But this is where artificial intelligence and machine learning come in.
Yeah. Well, data is – I think there's three things about data that we need to help people understand. A lot of people hear it. They may not necessarily fathom what it means because you get to certain numbers – and it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But imagine the first thing about data is gold. It's a currency. And a lot of companies today don't realize what the true value of their currency in their data is. It's not just customer data. It's sensor data. It's the ability to track supply chain. It's all of that. But there are hundreds of millions of pieces of data in everyday business transactions that a lot of companies may be gathering, but what insights are they gaining from them? So that's the first thing. There's tons of data. In fact, I heard a statistic fairly recently that in the last 2 years, more data has been created by the human species than had been in the previous 50, and that number will double in the next 18 months, and it'll continue to do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. And so, I think we're at a pivotal juncture in our business world. And I think that, again, why we started our company was to help, just like we're democratizing technology, we mm-hmm. want to democratize the power of data
yeah.
in your business.
Yeah.
And It happens in a number of different ways.
Yeah.
We have a mantra. We, in our advisory, try to help customers of all types in four dimensions. The first one is not price, but it's risk management. Risk management is the governing framework. And why we say that, and we'll get a little bit more into it in our next segment, but people just often don't think about risk other than cost.
Sure.
Our second pillar is in how we create value for our customers through saving money. And we'll throw out terms like CapEx or OpEx, but really it's in how do you optimize that. Third is optimization, so how do you do more with what you already have? And fourth is how do we increase your productivity? How do you measure that in your people and your resources?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'd like to tie back in the other two points that I was making about the data, but we'll bring that in on our next segment as well. One more thing, and this is important, I think, for our listeners. Where do they see themselves today versus where they'd like to be in 5 to 10 years? And that's another key pillar to our success and our considerations.
And actually, just to add to that, Jonathan, I don't think it's 5 to 10. I think it's like 6 months to 18 months. The rate of change is so fast right now.
Good point.
So stick with us, and we'll be right back after the break.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. 888-388-OPEX. Now, back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Guardian Insights, elevating your business to the next level. If you're just joining us, we were discussing how we dedicate ourselves to business transformation, and we have four pillars that we live by. And we think the four pillars are applicable to any business situation. So we talked about risk management and mitigation as being our number one concern. It sounds a little counterintuitive because as a company, your primary goal is to increase profits and reduce expense, your top line and your bottom line. And we believe that you really can't do that without thinking of risk management first. Jonathan, I was just talking to an investor last week from the UK, and we were having a nice little conversation, actually via LinkedIn, which people can see, about the need for startups to be concerned about, be aware of their regulatory posture, which just means being aware of the regulations they're subject to. He disagreed with me.
Right.
And then there were other people who jumped in.
And why was there a disagreement? I mean, this is one of those challenges that we always face. And going back to your point, Keith, the facts remain that when a business starts, we all know statistics, we've heard numbers, you know, 65% fail in the first year and 75% fail in the second. Why wouldn't somebody be concerned with what their industry regulations would be? Well, tell me what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think let's look at two dimensions. So we can look at the startup themselves, whatever product that they're developing. They're worried about whether or not, well, it could be just sheer ignorance. They don't realize that they're so new, they don't realize that there's laws and regulations that apply to them. But if they're a little bit more mature, they're worried about how are they going to get funded? Will somebody actually be interested in their product?
Right.
And they're being coached by some investors, not all, that if they start looking more into these things, that maybe they'll have a lesser valuation, maybe the exit strategy will take longer.
Makes sense. I mean, I understand that especially like in the VC and the private equity worlds, that there are realities that if a very public funding source becomes aware of a startup's irregularities, per se, let's just use that term, that could be a problem. How do we look at that, though? I mean, Guardian Insight Group is there for the benefit of talking to both sides of the table here. That's one of the things that we strive for. Where would this investor's happy medium be from that perspective?
I believe the investor's happy medium. I think coming from both technology and financial background for myself, I think there can be a happy medium. I think if we look at where banks are today, since 2008, since the mortgage crisis, there's been a lot of regulatory scrutiny that has been spawned from that. And we know the administration is talking about loosening up those levers, but still, it's there today. And I think that people are sometimes too afraid when they hear certain buzzwords on Dodd-Frank, and I won't get into too many bank regulations, but the happy medium is where instead of doing things in isolation, if you know you have a good product and you know it has legs, you should be working with the investor community, being more upfront about the challenges you have, because they may be the ones to help you through that. They might know the right agency or department that has dealt with this problem already.
Well, this is going back to what we talked about in our first segment about trust. The way to work together is to establish trust and to build on it, and I think that's a very important point. It's part of our all four of our pillars have to do with trust, and I think that's an important aspect that ties everything together. So going back to this happy medium and working together with the funder, working together with the VC, the PE groups, should a startup be the only reality for a person to invest in? We both know that's not really the case. There's lots of options for, you know, money to be made. But thinking about the stakeholders at different levels, you and I as a co-founder of an organization that is committed to transforming business, we understand where their risks are for lots of different areas, not just a startup. Going concerns, multinationals, a lot of overseas businesses wanting to come to the United States to do business. How does that tie to the rest of our puzzle? I mean, we've got three other pillars that we've been talking about or kind of alluding to in this segment. What are the other three so that we can talk about those?
They all flow together. So back to when people think risk, traditionally, they're really thinking when we say risk management, outside of official enterprise risk management groups in a financial services, insurance, regulated industry.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, risk management is really about the cost of something. How much is something going to cost me, either in hard costs or soft costs?
Why is that? Tell me why the conventional wisdom is that. Because, I mean, I'm a salesperson. I'm a marketing person. I'm all about getting my message out there. I'm all about helping my business become relevant or more relevant or being number one in my space, so to speak. How does risk mitigation or risk management play into that? Because my challenge as a business person isn't necessarily about worrying, so to speak. I hired people to worry about that, right?
Right.
So.
Right. And you're absolutely right. Traditionally, folks in your position doing large enterprise deals, whatever they may be, you're not necessarily going to want, in the traditional sense, you're not necessarily going to want to know what the risk situation is for your customers.
Mm-hmm.
Your main goal is to know if they have the budget.
Right, asking the tough questions.
Can they pay for it?
Yeah, can they pay for it? Do they have a need? Have we established the credibility that we have to establish, which is, again, going back to trust, as to why a business would do business with me and my team,
right,
for example. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
On the other side of that table, the people actually doing the buying, and really buying should be the last aspect of this. We talk about why would you need that solution, whoever's selling it, to begin with? What is the problem that that particular product is going to solve? And this is for anyone selling a product. This is for the small, medium businesses out there as well.
Sure.
It's when you're presenting your solution to a customer, think about it in terms of risk. Why do they need you to begin with?
Yeah. It's the old adage of you don't buy a drill just for the sake of buying the drill. You buy the drill because you want the hole.
Right.
Right. It seems like a very simple anecdote, right? So from that perspective, and this is where one of the reasons why Keith and I do so well together in terms of talking about this is because we've been on opposite sides of the table. Where, Keith, do you see the challenges today with optimizing cost savings or optimizing, you know, we call it OpEx or CapEx, and we talk about where companies want to migrate from one to the other depending on the financial situation or liquidity of the markets or whatever. There's lots of outside factors, but where do you see things today?
This is a really interesting question, only in that, and to be sure, we're not financial advisors.
Right.
But we've lived in a period post, let's just put a line in the sand, 2008.
Yeah.
Post, we'll call it the last economic crisis. There hasn't been one.
Right.
In a good amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And back to how most large companies have been working, they've been going off of a steady state of budget. This mm-hmm. goes back to a budget consisting of capital expense and operating expense.
Mm-hmm.
And they have targets to hit. And so when you have to hit those targets and you plan for those targets, that's all well and good. But what happens when you hit the financial speed bump? So you've missed your earnings, you missed your profitability numbers. This is when it becomes important.
Right. What is, and I know we're going to talk about this, what is the reality of the speed of communication today that this becomes a challenge for all the stakeholders, because you're talking about publicly traded and private companies. Everybody's got their own version of the stakeholder. So what are we talking about there in terms of speed of communication?
Well, I think speed of communication depends on the size of the organization.
Okay.
If you're talking large financial institution, speed of communication could happen quickly.
Yeah.
But the crushing weight of worrying about what your regulators and auditors want you to do could inhibit that speed of communication.
Okay.
On a smaller scale, if you're a small company, speed of communication can happen really fast, but you don't have the financial wherewithal to actually act on that.
True. Make the reaction. Yeah. So what are we going to talk about when we come back, just out of curiosity?
Well, we've still got two pillars left. We've got optimization and increasing your productivity.
Yeah.
And so we'll cover that when we come back from the break.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. 888-388-OPEX. Now, back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Guardian Insights, elevating your business to the next level with Guardian Insight Group. For those who are coming back to us, we covered the first two of our four pillars in our last segment, which was risk management, and we started getting into cost savings. We're now moving into optimization and productivity enhancement. Optimization is simply doing more with what you already got.
So would you call that best practices, Keith?
It is best practices, but you first have to learn those best practices.
That's a good point, because a lot of companies believe that they do everything right, don't they?
Well, I think a lot of people will say it. Whether they really mean it or not, it's a different thing.
Proof is in the pudding, so to speak.
Yeah, but we see that all the time. Our clients come to us and say, hey, what could we be doing better?
Right.
But optimization is really, when you think about any company, you've got an existing set of assets and resources. Are you using that to the best of your ability? And what I mean is, I've been in situations, and I won't, of course, name who or where. There was one company that had over 14 different monitoring solutions with five different software vendors.
Right.
And the argument could be made, there's two arguments usually for this, especially if you're a cash-heavy company, meaning you have the ability to pay all this money with technology providers. I like what I got. I don't want to relearn what I already know, or that each one of these is a very specific use case of technology that I have to have for my division, my segment.
So it's siloed or redundant because it can be.
Right.
Okay.
But if you think about it, that might have been fine during the go-go years, or even if you're a really healthy company the last half a decade. It's fine to have 13 or 14 different monitoring tools over five companies. But reality is, especially now with some of the things around cyber risk, information mm-hmm. security, mm-hmm. it's just more vectors that nefarious entities could come after you.
So exploitation becomes a bigger risk is what you're saying?
In that one example, sure.
Yeah. So let me ask this, Keith. This is one of those challenges where small to mid-sized companies may not necessarily have to worry about this as much, but they still do need to have this as a back of mind consideration. Data. We talked about data in the first segment. I talked about one of the three points, and one is the amount of data, the plethora of data out there. The secondary piece that I really wanted to talk about is the security aspect, because the challenge today, and this kind of goes into this optimization conversation, is that there are many ways to secure data. The challenge is, how do you, as the business owner or the C-level executive who has to sign off on the financial report, for example, if it's a publicly traded company, how do you know for sure that the data is there and secure, and that you're doing everything you can as an individual or as a company to ensure that stakeholder value is being managed in that case?
Well, the truth of the matter is, and this is just my experience, my opinion, but just from knowing the banking side of things, no one can really say for a certainty that they know their data is secure.
Right.
And the reason why I say that is, you can have the best chief information security officer, you can have the best technology products, but even the government doesn't allow an entity to say that they're 100% secure. And there's regulations
right.
all around that.
Right. And that's a global issue. That's not just here in the United States, right?
Right.
Yeah. So go ahead.
So it's a very interesting thing if you are a board member, a CFO, in some cases a chief privacy officer, chief information security officer, your board expects you to say that you've got it 100% in control. But you really can't do more than 99.9% maybe.
Right.
Because you'll never get to 100.
And even that is an expensive proposition, isn't it?
Well, that's it. I mean, that's the cost of trying to secure that. That's the crushing weight that many financial institutions are facing.
So we're talking about this right now in kind of more esoteric terms, but let's get realistic for a second. We know that there's a regulation coming out in Europe called GDPR.
Right.
And it's a Data Protection and Privacy Act for lack of – I mean, I'm not going to say what GDPR itself is because most people know, but for reality, GDPR is coming into play next May of 2018. I saw a countdown timer yesterday actually posted by one of the big consulting firms that you have 263 days now today until GDPR is enacted officially. What does that mean for multinational corporations and even companies that do business cross-border?
So GDPR is the latest buzzword or buzz acronym, I guess, General Data Protection Regulation of the EU. And really what it says is, paraphrasing, any company of any size doing business that might touch an EU citizen is automatically regulated.
Mm-hmm.
And then depending on the size and scale, you have different levels of fines and what we call enforcement actions.
Right.
And there are many, many companies propping up in whether it's technology or consulting to try to address that. So we're not going to get into all that today.
So each of those may have one sub area of the regulation to either help with a company getting prepared for or predicting or planning or whatever that case may be. When we talk about that, you know, from our advisory perspective, why are people going to listen to somebody like us, just out of curiosity?
Well, I think the key is what you're just leading into is that there's going to be a whole new cottage industry. So we think about Y2K for those wondering Y2K. We joked that it was the all IT jobs creation program. And then we had Enron and the accounting scandal, and that was the employ all technical accountants program. So GDPR is going to be like the employ all regulatory consultants and audit consultants program because it's a wide net. Everyone's subject to it.
Right.
So why people would listen to us is we're going to basically explain to them what their true risk is for their size and scale of the entity. They can still choose some massive consulting firm to help them get out of it, but wouldn't it be helpful to think about it before it's enacted?
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Planning beforehand is something that we always get taught. I mean, that's an old financial adage, and my background in financial services is very simple. People don't fail because they fail. They fail because they fail to prepare or fail to plan. So it's a challenge along those lines. When we talk about our advisory perspective, it's from years of experience and years of seeing the mistakes made at different levels. And we're talking global companies, we're talking local companies, we're talking publicly traded and private. One of the considerations that I think we need to bring out here is the optimization piece of pillar number three is all about understanding, like you said earlier, what the core existence provides already, what the company already has in place may be good enough. And I think that's one of the other challenges. We hear this good enough consideration. Is it enough? But at a board level, it's not, is it?
No. And that's a great point, Jonathan. So when we think about optimization already have, you might have, let's say, 75 or 80% of the solution you need. You just don't know how to tie it together.
Right.
If you bring in anyone, a large consulting firm or a technology provider, they may just say, hey, scrap it and redo it or rebuild it or start from scratch. I think what's more helpful, because that will take, in some cases,
years. Yeah, and a lot of money. Yeah.
Assess what you already have and what other up-and-coming technologies or existing technologies can you adopt to put your solution together?
Yeah.
And then you bring it in front of your auditors, you bring it in front of your regulators for those who are
regulated.
Under those entities.
Yeah. And what about the board? I mean, this is a consideration that we've always talked about as part of our emphasis on making sure that the companies are well taken care of, so to speak. The board level decision making, I don't think a lot of people understand, and that's something we'll talk about in a future show. But I think it's important to understand that What is the goal of a good board of directors for any publicly traded company or any smaller company that has the ability to have a board of directors?
Well, normally the board is dedicated to the care and feeding of the entity or the organization.
Right.
Dedicated to moving the strategy of the company forward.
Right.
But because of increasing regulatory oversight, they've had to take kind of a nanny view mm-hmm. of the organization.
Yeah.
And it's not something that many existing board members have had experience with. So right. So you see where companies are adding folks with regulatory experience, with audit experience. I mean, you always have an audit committee.
Right.
But ones with actual deep practical experience in this.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking along the lines of like years ago when we had the CEO pay considerations and debates and the board was stepping in and saying, well, now we have a not just a governance committee, but we have a compensation committee. And that's a standard standing committee in a lot of cases with a lot of publicly traded companies. At this point, though, with all these regulatory considerations, especially in the day and age of the internet where cross-border trade and commerce are common across multiple dimensions or multiple entities, do you feel like today's board-level decision-making is empowered enough or educated enough? And I'm not trying to insult anybody, but I'm just saying that there's so much data and so much information about so many different things. When does a board put a stake in the ground and how can we help with that as far as optimizing?
So, I won't set an indictment on boards. Boards are very important to the governing of organizations. What I would say a little bit differently is that the rate of, and I'll focus this on technological change, mm-hmm. it's imperative the board keeps up with that. And that can mean a couple of different things. The easiest thing is to understand cyber risk and data security. Those are probably two of the most practical things that boards can jump into right now because that's somewhere where they can actually get help if they don't know it. But they have to be willing to admit that they lack that skill set.
Yeah, and that's a big issue too, isn't it? I'm saying this from our experience too, that we find that a lot of times, and this is a no indictment on people who are running successful businesses, because it takes ego, it takes a determination, a doggedness that a lot of people who are in that corporate realm don't have, right? Entrepreneurial spirit is one thing, but being able to be a leader in a visible corporate position is somewhat of a different animal. And what you and I have found in our experience is that a lot of times this becomes a challenge to making a decision that may be positive in the long run, but in the immediate short term could be detrimental to that person's individual standing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
And this is back to just board level conversations. I think what has happened is more board level conversations have been a result of breaches in data. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw that with Anthem a couple of years back.
And Target.
And the amount of people who didn't even realize that they were exposed.
Yeah. But that's a reactionary piece, right? GDPR, for example, being, you know, tying it back in, that's clearly on the horizon. And that, I think, is an important part for people to understand that, yeah, you're going to have reactive issues. You're going to have breaches. You're going to have challenges. You're going to have things that come into play. I'm really curious, you know, what your thoughts are on that. And maybe in our next segment, we can talk a little bit more about how that comes into play with our fourth pillar, which is the enhancement of productivity.
Yep. Well, thanks for all of you who've been listening to us so far. If you want to reach us, our website is www.gigsv.biz. And you can call us at 1-888-388-OPEX. And we'll come right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. 888-388-OPEX. Now, back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Thanks again for listening to Guardian Insights, elevating your business to the next level with Guardian Insight Group. If you are hearing us for the first time, we've been talking about how Jonathan Ziegler, my co-partner, and I, Keith Koo, came to be with our practice and our four pillars that we follow. So we covered risk management, which is this overarching framework of thinking everything in terms of risk. We covered cost savings and whether it's CapEx or OpEx. We had a really healthy conversation around optimization, and we're about to cover our fourth pillar, productivity enhancement.
Yeah, so Keith, one of the things that we've talked about over and over again, and this is an ongoing conversation because of the way that times have changed in terms of how business maintains its competitive edge. Where does a company really become the leader in its industry or its space in terms of how we look at things? And we've talked about the first three pillars. We find that productivity enhancement actually really does give a company an advantage.
Absolutely. You see it, productivity enhancement, you see it in companies like an Amazon. And you see it with Walmart trying to catch up. The ability to drive out fractional cost. I mean, Amazon, their profitability is less than one half of 1%.
But their volumes are huge.
Their volumes are huge.
Yeah.
But that all has to do with being able to drive efficiency. I read an article the other day that Amazon now has more warehouse capacity than all of the retailers combined.
Yeah, and I've heard that. And they have a lot more automation in those warehouses as well, the robots and the capability of what those robots are. And we talked about Bay Networks a few years ago when we were talking about how they were the warehouse of the future because they had automated distribution channel lines from their warehouses in terms of packing and shipping, right?
Right.
Yeah, so precursors to the current state of affairs as far as an Amazon is concerned.
Right. I mean, productivity enhancement used to be defined purely as how much more am I getting out of my people? So
right.
Where optimization was how much more I'm getting in my stuff.
Right.
Productivity enhancement means can I get more of my people? We saw this in the early to mid-2000s as many companies were adopting technology with what we call system administration that through virtualization of computers – they needed far less people to actually manage their systems.
Right. So process improvement as well as productivity enhancements around standard operating procedures per se.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we saw that a lot with outsourcing firms, people who are familiar with having somebody else run parts of your operation. We're finding now that in many cases, and we won't get into the geography, it really was just wage arbitrage.
Right.
The actual value added other than just grinding down the cost of a resource.
Right.
There wasn't too much value add there.
Right. And those same firms could be representing the same candidate five different ways or five different times for five different opportunities, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's another piece of this puzzle that we've talked about over time, but becomes important for a competitive edge, right? When a publicly traded company or a private enterprise that is trying to manage its own margins into a better state for all the stakeholders. And again, in a private company, if it's a family-owned business or if it's an individual entrepreneur who has not quite gotten to the stage of getting into a venture firm's eyesight or optics, they still want to do the best thing that they can to make sure that they get the biggest paycheck.
Well, here's, again, a very interesting thought for you and your car. Companies used to look at models, valuations on how you're running, how efficient you are. And I had just talked to a VC last month who said, you know, really at the point that they're looking at a startup, a technology startup or any startup, they really don't want to see anything in regards to you running your own infrastructure. They want to see you having adopted a cloud technology and using open source tools and finding ways of doing it that really drives down that cost, which all goes back into the productivity enhancement.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's an important point, too, for any company, especially like the siloed that we talked about earlier. When you have a business silo or business unit that's doing things that's potentially duplicative, we've talked about shared services in the past, and I think that was a centralization of infrastructure. When some companies get to that point, they realize, hey, we have so many inefficiencies that it would take 5 years and $500 million to potentially centralize things. Then it doesn't make sense per se. But that's where we come in to kind of do the optimization review, right?
Right. To your point, a couple of years ago, one of our potential clients, they had called and said that they wanted help on negotiating a massive software deal with a very large software vendor. And lo and behold, they had 13 divisions with 13 separate procurement groups and a 14th overall chief procurement officer. And so we basically said there really wasn't much way we could help with that without the company, the organization as a whole
changing
because that's not something that we can fix.
Right. And that makes sense too. I mean, that's a big consideration around this day and age because there are different – and this goes back to the point we talked about in the last segment about the board level decision making, right? The board has to help the corporate officers figure out where they want to go. So one of the things that I want to wrap up with, and I think we're going to probably have to talk about this on a future show, is the third point on my data continuum, which is, what do you do with it? There's a lot of data that's out there, and it has to do with not just the areas that we covered in our four pillars today, but it's all about what do companies then do? What makes them use that data, that currency that we talked about in point number one? What do they do with it? How do they analyze it? Where do they go with it? What do they use it for their competitive advantage, especially in their own competitive space? And I think that's something that we're going to wind up having to talk about down the road. But wrapping it up today, how do you think people should be looking at us and what Guardian Insights is all about?
Well, I think how they should look at us is we try to be the advisors on letting you know reality, right? So I think a lot of times firms are going to try to fix all your problems. We just want to hear what challenges you face, mm-hmm. and whether or not there's an opportunity for us to help either us come in or you fix it yourselves.
Awesome. One of the things that I think you've mentioned over and over again, which is I think important, is we're all about elevating business to the next level. That can mean different things to different people. So we'll talk about that more next time. Thanks, Keith.
Thanks again for tuning in. You can reach us at www.gigsv.com or call us at 1-888-388-OPEX.
You've been listening to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. For questions or comments about today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. And be sure to listen again next week at this time for more Guardian Insights right here on this station.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.